Good morning. I want to thank everyone for being here this morning. I want to thank everybody for VBS last week. I saw pictures. It was beautiful. Everyone did an outstanding job. I want to thank everybody who filled in for me with the skits. You guys were incredible. I saw some of the videos of that, and you all jumped in at the last minute to cover that. I really appreciate that. Last week, I joined a club that I never, ever, ever wanted to join, and I wish I could return the membership card. But while at camp, we were on Thursday morning, about 1:30 in the morning, God decided I was going to join the Kidney Stone Club. And all those guys that sit around talking about their war wounds and what did it feel like, and they start measuring, and I'm a part of that club now. We'll try to make that a one-time occurrence. We'll do our very best to make that a one-time occurrence. The last couple of weeks, I've been thinking a lot about fathers. Building up to this weekend, the camp that I was at, I'll share a little bit more about that a little bit later in the lesson, but it was a young men's leadership camp. So a lot of fathers were there, a lot of sons, and we're just talking about what does it mean to be a father that glorifies God? How do I become that? How do I become something that God calls me to be? Because none of us is that by default. We're just not. But we're in a weekend where we think about fathers a lot, and if you haven't yet, I would encourage you to contact yours or the male figure in your life that served in that capacity. And we started talking through some of the different examples that we have in the Bible of good men that led their families well. They were examples of what it meant to be a father that would glorify God by the way that they served. Now, we could look at negative examples, and there are plenty. You could look at Eli and his sons. There's so many poor examples of what it means to be a good father. But I'd like to look at one positive example. In your New Testament, turn over to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. And I'd like us to think about Jesus' father. Not God the Father, but the earthly father who adopted him as his own son and raised him as his own son, even though initially that was not going to happen. We know in chapter 1, as Matthew describes the birth of Jesus, in verse 18, the birth of Jesus took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. And her husband Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. I appreciate how VBS rubbed off on Richard. And we're trying to get this method reading of Acts chapter 27 this morning. But I want you to take just a second and think about those two verses. Verses 18 and 19. Matthew is just very brief about explaining how Mary came to be with child. Other Gospels explain a little bit more about that conversation. But imagine being Joseph. You have this young woman that you've betrothed yourself to. You plan to marry her in the not-too-distant future. You know that you haven't been with her. She should not be pregnant. And then she has to come and let you know that she is. And imagine how awkward that conversation must have been, how terrifying that must have been for her to share with him, especially considering that because of Jewish law, he actually had the right to put her away. And according to Jewish law, she could have been stoned. But she shares with her fiancé she's expecting. And imagine getting the news that it was an unusual conception. Look, this isn't somebody else's. This is not some other man's child. I'm with God's child. And him having to wrap his head around that. And so his plan, instead of revealing everything, he was just going to quietly end the engagement. He was no longer going to marry her. He wasn't, on his end, going to make a big deal out of everything. And I think we get a hint in these first couple of verses about the character, about the quality of Joseph as a man. That he was merciful. And he was gracious. Didn't demand his rights. And he's wrestling through. He's come up with a plan in verse 19 that he's going to put her away. And in verse 20, it says, as he considered these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream. So an angel of the Lord has already appeared to Mary to let her know that she's been chosen to bear this special son. Now an angel of the Lord has finally appeared to Joseph. And maybe that was a part of their conversation. You know, God may have said something to you, but God has not talked to me about this. In verse 20, God does talk to him. In a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. God confirms this is not some other earthly man's child. This is a divine child. Verse 21, confirming what Mary had shared with him. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. Imagine waking up from that dream. You know, in the Bible study this morning, as we were talking about Daniel and all the different men throughout the Bible who've had these dreams, imagine having that dream as Joseph. Verse 22, Matthew reveals that all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. And when Joseph woke from sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took his wife, but knew her not until she had given birth to a son, and he called his name Jesus. So he follows through. He follows through with the instruction that God gave him through this dream. What do we see here? Well, as we've already mentioned, we see this mercy on his part. He is merciful toward the mother of Jesus. He didn't demand anything. He didn't punish her. He didn't give her over to people to be punished, but instead he mercifully and graciously married her and made her his wife, just as they had planned. He mercifully adopted Jesus and made Jesus his own son. He didn't have to do that. I'm sure you've heard of the song, He Didn't Have to Be. You know, the song that the country writer wrote about the stepdad that took him on as his own son, even though he didn't have to because he wasn't his biological son. Now, the story about Jesus' birth continues in chapter 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the Great, the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born, King of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." And we know that they follow this miraculous star. There's something unique about this star. It's mentioned several times in this half of the chapter. And it comes to stop over the top of where Jesus is with his parents. In verses 10 and 11, when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And just a quick point, you know, there are people that make such a big deal out of this star. And it's incredible. I wonder what it looked like. But you realize that these wise men don't stop and worship until they come into the presence of an infant Jesus. The star is amazing. They've been following it for who knows how long. But they don't worship the star. They understand the star is pointing to something even more spectacular. And it's God in this child. But in verse 12, they're warned in a dream not to return to Herod, and so they depart and go a different way. And in verse 13, now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." That's not what he signed up for. I mean, think about the dreams that you have when you're dating, and you start thinking through with your special someone, what is our future going to look like? You know, as we finish school, as we finish trade school, whatever, when we get married, and where are we going to live, and what family are we going to be close to, and what are holidays going to look like, and how many kids, and what genders, and what names, and, you know, you start playing through some of that. I don't think at any point that Joseph and Mary were thinking, you know, one day, how about you get pregnant miraculously by God, and I'll adopt what will be perceived to be an illegitimate child, and then we'll have this, like, sociopath ruler try to hunt us down, so we have to run away to a foreign country for a while. I don't think they ever had that conversation. But in a dream, Joseph is warned that Herod the Great is trying to kill the son he's taken on as his own. And so in verse 14, when he rose, he took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt. And he stayed there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Now eventually, in verses 19 through 23, "After Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, 'Rise, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead.' And he rose." Do you realize he keeps doing that? "Then he receives a message, whether from an angel or in a dream, and he hears the message, and then the next thing that we hear in the text is, 'And he rose and did, and he rose and went, and he rose and traveled, and he rose and married her,' and he just keeps responding to the instruction and revelation he receives from God. So he goes to Nazareth, and they raise Jesus." Now, we don't know much more about Joseph. We have the incident when Jesus is 12 years old and they're traveling to Jerusalem. We have that go on. We understand that Joseph was present for that. But after that, we don't read much more about Joseph. But what we do have, I think we can make some of these points, that Joseph as a father, both as a husband and a father, was merciful. And he lived a sacrificial love. He was willing to sacrifice and be selfless in order to meet the needs that Jesus had. Eventually, the rest of his siblings as well. He was a man of faithful obedience, that when God spoke, even as difficult or as uncomfortable as the instruction was, he just did it. And I think he did that because he put God first. When God spoke and said, "What she told you is right," well, God confirmed. "We're going to do what God said to do." What a great example that Jesus had as a father. Now, not perfect. We know he wasn't sinless. But he was a great example. As you think through and think back on the men that shaped you, not everyone has known their biological father. Not everybody has had that privilege in some cases. But we all have a father figure, Lord willing, a man that God used to show us what godly manhood looked like. Think back over that relationship and think about some of the lessons, the positive lessons that you could have learned. There's a gentleman who did that, and I really appreciated his list. He made this list after the passing of his father, and came up with 10 unforgettable lessons on fatherhood. And this is what he had to share. That his father was never too busy as a father. What he explained by that was his dad was busy. But as busy as his father was, he took opportunity and he took time, he made time to speak with him and be with him and do things with him. And if there had been a period of time where his father had been busier, then he made sure there was still time where he would get with him and meet up with him again. He was never too busy. He was a Bible man. He was a Bible man. He wasn't a collector of Bibles. I think this matches up with what we would say about Joseph, that he was a man of the Bible. He was someone that let Bible speak truth into his life. This is what he shared about his dad. That on his 17th birthday, his father gave him a gift of a new Bible. And this is what he wrote on the inside cover. "Bud, nothing could be greater than to have a son who loves the Lord and walks with him. Your mother and I have found this book our dearest treasure. We give it to you. And doing so can give nothing greater. Be a student of the Bible and your life will be full of blessing. We love you, Dad." His dad was a Bible man and lived by it. His dad was a dad who praised God. He said he often heard him singing or whistling hymns. And he loved to come to congregational worship to praise. If you're a father, wouldn't you love for your kids to remember that about you? You know, you would hate that they said, "Well, Dad just never went to church. Dad would rather have been out on a boat. Dad would have rather been out in the woods. Dad would have rather been in front of the TV. Dad would have But instead, my father praised God. He said his father cheered him on. And what he meant by that was he let him know that regardless of what he chose to do with his life, he was supportive of that as long as his life was used to glorify God. He would praise how intelligent he was and how compassionate he was, but what he did as an occupation didn't matter in the long run. And he communicated that. I'm grateful I heard my parents say this. I need to do a better job saying this to my kids. I don't care if you work in a factory turning widgets for the rest of your life. If you love God and are faithful to Christ, you will make me the happiest parent ever. It doesn't matter what initials are at the end of your name or how much money is in your bank account. But if you're faithful to God and living joyously in Him, I'm grateful. He cheered him on. He had a real walk with God. I remember catching this with my parents, and Lord willing, you did with yours. But this gentleman shared, he got up earlier than normal one morning and came downstairs and found his father kneeling in prayer to God. And then quietly went back upstairs, hoping he had not interrupted his father. It wasn't for show. There were no pictures. There was no social media post. Just had my morning prayer. That's not why he did it. He realized that his father had a real living relationship with God, and that stood out to him. He taught him theology in the backyard. I had to think through this. They had been working in the backyard, and he just quietly shared in the middle. They were just working, sweat coming down, and it was hot. And he just looked up at his son and made a comment about God's desiring a relationship with him. A couple of seconds of pause, and they went back to working in the yard. And there was a lot that he communicated in that. He communicated that God was real, that God was a personal being, that God cared about him, and was hinting at the fact that God had done something in order to be in a relationship with him someday. And he was taking opportunities to instruct his son about God in the middle of daily life. He loved us when it wasn't easy. When I first saw that heading on his list, I had a different idea in my head. And this is the idea that I had in my head. I read that heading, he loved us when it wasn't easy. And I went, yeah, there are times when my kids are hard to love. And that's not what he meant. Now that's true, because all of us are hard to love sometimes. But what he meant was this. And as a dad, I needed to hear it. His dad worked. He would get up and leave and go to work, and then he would come back. And when he would come back from work at the end of the day, guess how you feel? Tired. You're just tired. And you know what you want to do? You want to zone out. You just want some peace and quiet. You want some me time. You want, you know, whatever. But his mom shared, because he never saw this with his dad, his mom shared that he had a daily prayer that he would offer every day when he got home from work. Before he opened the door, he would ask God for strength to interact with his kids before they went to bed. And then he would open the door and come in and interact with his kids before they went to bed. What he meant was, there are times where it's hard because there's not much left in the tank. But the primary job is to raise up children. And so when it wasn't easy for him, he kept loving. What a great lesson. He helped him love the church. Guess what? There's no such thing as a perfect church here on earth. There is not. Full of broken people that sin, that are being remade in the image of Jesus. But every church is that. It's a group of people that that's still sin. And it's easy to complain about those sinners that sit across the row. Or complain about how someone didn't do something the way you wanted. You know, it is so easy. But his dad didn't complain about his church. And he didn't complain about the people in his church. He just loved them. And he served them. And he was joyful. And so his son did not grow up with some huge chip on his shoulder toward church. And he was so grateful for that. He saw his father live his faith in simple and practical ways. And then the last lesson, I can't read it because I wouldn't get through it. His father worked in ministry. And when he passed in 2007, this gentleman who wrote this was actually overseas serving in some form of ministry. He was not present when his father passed. But his father had all of his family come to his hospital room and spoke something to each of them quietly. So he would call for one child and talk to them, and then call for another child and talk to them. But he wasn't able to do that with his son because he wasn't there. And so when his son finally got back, he met up with one of his siblings and said, "What did Dad have to tell me? You know, what was Dad's dying message for me?" And his dying message was, "Tell Bud, ministry isn't everything. Jesus is." He was right. He was right. His point was that Jesus needs to come first. Jesus needs to come first. And everything else sorts out. And that was the most powerful lesson that he took from his father. I would encourage you, either today or this week, take a moment and come up with a list like that. What would you say? And you're thinking, 10, let's chop it in half. Just do 5. What are 5 unforgettable lessons, spiritual lessons, that you either caught or were taught from your dad or your father figure? And communicate those to him. You don't have to wait until after he's passed. You can honor him by sharing those with him now. Remember, he's imperfect. You know that. He knows that. That's not what we're talking about. But who are the men in your life that have spoken spiritual truth? And let's just say this for a second. Let me share this with you. There's a reason that I'm qualifying some of what I'm saying. So 2008 Salt Camp, all over the country, there during the summer, over the last couple of years, there are some camps that have started, both for young men and for young ladies. And the idea behind the camp was, there are these camps that are great for our kids. They're spiritually encouraging for our kids. They develop great friendships. Those are great things. But sometimes when you have young guys and young girls in the same place, it can get kind of distracting. That's just natural. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just natural. And so someone asked the question, I wonder what a camp would be like if we could try to teach some important things without the natural distraction of guys and girls and their teens. And so they started some. There's one in the Northeast. There's one in Indiana. And just this year, there's one in Tennessee. This one is for young men from ages 13 to about 22. And that's where the kidney stone happened, was at that camp. But at that camp, there were 28 young men that came together for a week. And what did they do for camp? They had 8 Bible classes a day. 8 Bible classes a day. They had several hours of free time where they could play horseshoes and frisbee and all other kinds of things. They had a day where they hiked because we're at Falls Creek, Falls State Park, beautiful park. But for the bulk of the time, they're there singing and learning to lead and going into Bible classes in 1 Samuel or how to study your Bible or how to have daily devotions. It's supposed to be a spiritually uplifting camp. Some of them are fathers, some of them are sons. But you realize, as some of these kids come to camp, some of them come from homes that are harder. They come from homes that are harder. Not everybody has a father figure in the home. They don't. Days like this that are really special, where we remember our dads, days like this can be hard for them. And we need to appreciate that. Days like this can be hard for people who have lost their fathers. There's someone that I know that's celebrating Father's Day for the first time after her dad has passed. That happens over the course of time. There are some men who would love to be fathers and are married, but for whatever reason are not in a position where they're able to have children. And Father's Day is hard for them because of that reason. We want to acknowledge that. But you realize that's not unique. You realize that there are people in the Bible that went through some of those experiences as well. Just for a second. Think about what Father's Day would have been like for Samuel as he grew up in Eli's house. Was there a father figure in the house? Yes. Was it good? No. As you read through the New Testament, think about Timothy, who was taught his faith by his mother and his grandmother, but not his unbelieving father. But do you know what he ends up calling Paul? My father in the faith. Paul calls him my son in the faith. God still blesses us with relationships where men of faith speak truth into our lives. And we need to seek out those kind of relationships. And those of us who are older need to be looking to build those kind of relationships. And those are men where you can think about that list. Who was it that led you to Christ? Who are the father figures, the spiritual father figures that God's provided in your life? Be grateful for them. What can you say thank you to them about? And when everything shakes out, do you realize all those imperfect fathers, we have the ultimate father, God, who's adopted us and made us his child. What have you learned from that father figure? Think about that. Make a list of that and tell God thank you for that. There are definitely some things that all of us as fathers could benefit from and learn from. We could look at Joseph's examples and other examples. And I'll tell you what, I'm so grateful. Every time I saw one of those pictures of the dads who took a lunch break to come down here this last week, that's a father. And you kids who saw your dads come down here and do that, tell them thank you. Because they're sacrificing because they love you. And they're acting silly. I cracked up when I saw Bowie swinging that inflated mace or whatever he had. We need more fathers like that. If there's anybody this morning, any of us men that need prayers of encouragement to be a better father, I'd like to encourage you to let us know how we can help you with that. And if you're someone that has not yet responded to the Father, to God, by becoming one of his children through Jesus, there's an opportunity for that. Whatever your need is, why don't you let us know while we stand and sing the song.